Want to get smarter about investing? Then tune into the Capital Ideas podcast from Capital Group, home of American Funds Distributors, Inc., one of the world's leading asset managers. Learn from portfolio managers with decades of experience by listening to the Capital Ideas podcast today.
This is Barron's Live. Each weekday, we bring you live conversations from our newsrooms about what's moving the market right now. On this podcast, we take you inside those conversations, the stories, the ideas, and the stocks to watch so you can invest smarter. Now, let's dial in.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Barron's Live, our daily webcast and podcast. I'm Lauren Rublin, Senior Managing Editor of Barron's. Thanks for joining us today. I've got Barron's Deputy Editor Alex Yule on the line to talk about tech stocks and more. The more today is actually the meme stock phenomenon, whereby swarms of retail traders pile into heavily shorted stocks like the movie theater operator AMC or BlackBerry and several others, and drive the stocks to the moon and back in wild trading completely untethered from fundamentals. Is this the revenge of the little guy? A social media driven phenomenon? A game? A joke? All of the above? I'll be really curious to know what Alex thinks. So let's get started. Welcome, Alex.
Hi, Lauren. Good to be here.
So the FANG stocks we used to talk about seem so last year now, don't they?
Yeah, they do. That might be a good thing for the FANG stocks, but we can talk more about that later.
Okay, I'd love to talk about those meme stocks. Tell me, what do you see happening here? Who's behind it? Where's all this heading? And from my perspective, most important, is this a sign of a market top? What do you think is going on?
Yeah, so, well, for one thing, I mean, this is sort of this big story that started in January, late January, when GameStop shares went nuts over basically a week period, a week-long period. And so this is almost, it's kind of been simmering, and then it's died down. GameStop shares fell significantly, tumbled really. And then it's kind of, we've had a lot of hearings in Congress about this topic. But the meme stock movement itself had sort of faded away to some degree over the last few months.
And we should remind people that GameStop and some of these other stocks, these companies are not particularly healthy companies.
Well, sure. So we can, right. So let's, okay, so we could step back and talk about the meme stock movement a little more. I mean, we certainly talked about GameStop back in January, but yes, there seems to be, if we wanted to try to define this meme stock universe, what seems to have happened is a bunch of retail traders, largely focused around this forum on Reddit called Wall Street Bets, have come together and found opportunities or found stocks that have been cast aside by Wall Street, right, and by fund managers and by the traditional investment world. And they largely tend to be companies that have been disrupted or that kind of technology has left behind in the rear, has left behind. And right. Almost, to me, there's a lot of nostalgia that's gone on here. We've talked about this a little bit, I think, on prior calls, but certainly GameStop fits the mold there. AMC Entertainment, a large movie theater chain owner, fits the bill. Bed Bath & Beyond, which has been wrapped up in this, fits the bill. BlackBerry, which
certainly is nostalgic,
this week rallied. I mean, at one time, of course, BlackBerry was its own disruptor, but that was 10, 15 years ago. Now BlackBerry is kind of the forgotten smartphone company. It doesn't even make smartphones anymore. It's now just an enterprise security company. So But all these companies fit that bill. And I think you're right that they also have this this share makeup whereby they're more heavily shorted, which creates the opportunity for retail investors to kind of alter the dynamics of the trading by maybe jumping on board and forcing a short squeeze for the folks who, and so that the folks who hold the stock have to get out. And they, of course, were not counting on what's essentially this online crowd of retail traders that we're gonna create a countervailing force for the short sellers, but that's basically what's happened. And so that's where we are. For some reason, this week, AMC is now the hot meme stock company, and it surged 100% yesterday. What's so interesting is, is kind of looking for the triggers for these things. And you're right, there are no fundamental reasons for the rallies that we've seen in these stocks. GameStop is got huge problems. AMC Entertainment has huge holdings as a movie theater company when streaming has really taken over and the future of the movie business isn't even really clear, right? And yet AMC Entertainment stock is now at a record high. So that's a real, that doesn't make any sense.
Right. It's especially bizarre given that after the pandemic, it's not even clear what the future of movie theaters are. Many entertainment companies are thinking of releasing new content first to home video, to streaming services instead of movie theaters.
Right. And that's absolutely what's been happening. Time Warner or Warner Media, owned by AT&T, at least for now, we can talk more about that later, this year has been releasing movies straight to HBO Max on the same day they've been headed to theaters. That's not a great recipe for driving audience to your theaters, right? So
correct.
You know, we don't know how that's going to play out. Look, we all love going to the movie theaters, I think, but the economics of it are not very good. And it's not particularly convenient when you can get a new movie streamed directly to your TV for a $10 a month subscription. So that's one. That's kind of the big reality around the movie theaters. Now, but what's interesting with these meme stocks is there's usually a trigger for the big rally. The trigger might not be a very good one, but you can usually at least find it. And yesterday's for AMC was particularly fun and new.
I know where you're going.
Because so basically, and AMC's CEO, Adam Aron, has taken a particular interest in his new retail shareholder base. And so you could sort of see this coming over the last few weeks, where he's talked to, he's basically been talking to these retail traders and saying, we want you here. We want you to be a part of our company. And yesterday they rolled out this thing called Investor Connect. And it's almost like a membership program for shareholders. At least right now, it's not a very big deal, but it's fascinating to think about. And the main perk of being part of Investor Connect is that you get free popcorn. So think of this. AMC Entertainment shareholders are going to get free popcorn when they go to the movie theater. You can take this in any number of ways. But to me, what's just so fascinating here is like, imagine these executive teams all over the country now and thinking to themselves, you know, I've tried buybacks, I've tried dividends, I've tried multi-billion dollar acquisitions. And it turns out all I needed to get my stock moving, you know, was free popcorn. So I mean,
I wonder what BlackBerry will hand out.
I'm partly kidding there, but not entirely. There's something happening with this retail investor base, and it's still playing out. And it's partly related to Robinhood and free trading, commission free trading. It's partly related to 0% interest rates, which is encouraging risk taking. I think it's still boredom to some degree. It certainly was boredom during the pandemic and people being interested in stock trading because they couldn't do other things. And then kind of overall of it is this fear of missing out or FOMO, as they call it. So
Alex, what should a non-meme trading investor do about this? Should they run from these stocks? Should they try to get involved in some way to capture a little bit of the upside? Should they watch from the stands and buy their own popcorn? What do you think?
My best answer to that would be, you know, should you go to Las Vegas and play poker or blackjack? I mean, I don't want to be dismissive about it, but that's basically what's happening here. I mean, you don't control the odds. You don't. It is hard to find any investing advantage with these things. I mean, yes, if you could have known that AMC was going to offer free popcorn to its investors, and that would somehow attract more interest amongst retail traders, you could have had the edge there and known that that was a catalyst for the stock. But that doesn't really, I mean, anything could be a catalyst for a stock in that world. So on this call or talking to our readers and our listeners, there is no real reason to try to play this. I think what will be interesting is to see how hedge funds and kind of institutions try to find their own edge around this, because that's invariably what will happen, right? Is that they'll see a new dynamic in the marketplace and try to adjust. If you're a long-term investor, and I think you're the best thing to do is sort of just enjoy it, watch it, read about it for sure. It's fascinating. But in the same way that watching, you know, the NBA playoffs this year is fascinating. I was thinking earlier that I feel like our job right now, you know, I feel like a sports reporter in the last few of this year, right? And we're watching
the play-by-play.
Play-by-play, the momentum switches, day, hour by hour, day by day. And that's really what's happening here. I think I'm fascinated by it, and it's a great story, and I'm grateful for that part of it for sure. I think the next step of this is going to be what happened, certainly what regulators do. I mean, I think they're flummoxed. They're trying to figure out what you do with this. And I think there's a brewing, there will be a kind of tension and battle that's going to play out within companies themselves between sort of the, call it the marketing side of the company and the more traditional legal side of the company. And I wanted to just, I made a note to myself because we see this happening with AMC right now, like today, because after offering free popcorn to investors yesterday, today AMC filed, decided it was going to sell more shares into the marketplace because why not, right? Take advantage of this higher stock price. And if you can get people to buy, it's a good way to, if you can get shareholders to buy, it's a good way to raise money. Can't really blame them for doing that.
And they kind of need the money.
And they do need the money, right? I mean, this is a company that was flirting with bankruptcy not that long ago. So you can't blame them for that. I'm not envious of their legal team today. Because I think it opens up a lot of questions, it raises a lot of questions around legal liability and could spur shareholder lawsuits and all sorts of things if and when things go south. And so if people wanna, it's interesting to read the filing, what AMC filed with the SEC today, because they basically said, they basically warned people about investing in their stock, AMC did. They said, under the circumstances, we caution you against investing in our Class A common stock unless you are prepared to incur the risk of losing all or a substantial portion of your investment.
So yesterday they offered you popcorn and welcomed you into the club, and today they warned you away from investing in the stock.
And so exactly. And this, I am sure, I mean, I don't know this for, I can imagine that this is a battle that plays out between kind of the management on one side and the legal team on another, who realize that there's certain additional things to worry about here. Everyone's grappling with that, I think. So that this is just a really good example in one company, which is going to become symbolic, I think, of what plays out here. This kind of stuff is always messy. It's just another form of disruption, I would argue. And we're going to have to see how it plays out in the marketplace. But again, a long-term investor, I think, sits back and enjoys the show and doesn't do much.
And wonders where the regulators are and when they might arrive in town. So let's leave the meme stocks there and move on to something that was a pandemic meme, and that is Zoom video communications, more than a meme, in fact. It got us through a very dark time. Zoom reported blockbuster earnings this past week, actually yesterday, 2 days ago. But there's some questions about what the future will look like. Tell us what's happening at Zoom.
Yeah, and this was one of those ones that was really predictable, right, to some degree. And we've talked about, like, how is Zoom, what happens to Zoom as the economy reopens and people return to work? It's interesting, by the way, to think of it as a meme stock, because Zoom traded like a meme stock last year, right? It was up hundreds of percents. But there was, unlike the meme stocks, you could at least more easily point to real catalysts and real change. And just looking at their sales over the last many quarters would show you that, right? So yesterday, the company said that its first quarter sales were up 200%, or in its latest quarter, sales were up 200%. That's really good. Any company would die for that, right? Except for the fact that Zoom sales in the prior three or four quarters have been growing like 300% or 400%. So everything's relative, right?
All relative.
So 200% is suddenly not so good. My colleague Eric Savitz in his coverage noted that the amount that Zoom has been beating Wall Street estimates also has been shrinking little by little. So they're still beating those numbers, but it's coming down. I think that's an interesting way to think about it. So yesterday's beat was 6% above the company's own previous guidance, but two quarters ago, it was like 33% above. So basically, they're surprising people less. And I think that makes sense, right? We've learned what Zoom is capable of. We've understood what Zoom is doing. It's harder to be caught by surprise with Zoom. I think the real question now going forward, it's very easy to be skeptical of Zoom, right? It's almost contrarian at this point to, I think it's a contrarian.
But it seems disloyal in some way too.
Well, we could debate that, right? It did get us through. People have Zoom fatigue to some degree. But I think what's going to be interesting with Zoom is the degree to which we don't know what the return to work is going to look like still, right? The hybrid approach, I think, is going to surprise a lot of people in much the same way our work from home surprised people during the quarantine. So if we all go back 100% to work 5 days a week, then yeah, Zoom, the Zoom doesn't have much of a future in this world. I don't know.
I don't see that happening.
There's been a lot of, I saw some new consumer data or employee data. Employees don't really want that. So if you're going back 2 to 3 days a week and people are in the office at some points and not in the office at other points, that's a really hard problem to solve. And when you have hard problems to solve, you have business opportunities, right? And Zoom is still perfectly positioned to solve that problem of some people at home, some people at work. So I think Zoom is still not a cheap stock, but it's not nearly as expensive as it once was. So I think Zoom is something to really watch for. Maybe I'm going to be in the minority to think that. And then the other thing that's interesting to me is Zoom has perhaps sort of become a hedge now on the reopening, because we're all very hopeful. The vaccines have been remarkable and miraculous and seem to be working really well in the United States. But if something goes wrong with our reopening, or, you know, God forbid the pandemic flares up again, Zoom could be is a pretty good hedge on that. So I think that's something to think about as well.
I think we should also note that Zoom itself is evolving. I think it's got it's launched a product now for conferences, and it's launched an app store, and it's thinking about ways to evolve as the world changes.
Yeah, they want to be a platform, and we all know investors love that word platform. They want to be more of a platform that goes beyond just that one piece of software that people have been using to video conference.
Right, platform and scale. Those are the meme themes of the digital era.
Right.
So I'd like to move on to the topic of media, which we touched on earlier. Before I do, I'll remind listeners that we'll take questions at the end of the call. We've already got some, but we'll have time for others. So please send them in. So we haven't been on air, so to speak, Alex, for about a month. And in that time, there's been some huge developments in the media world. AT&T, after fighting with billions of dollars to acquire Warner Media, or the assets that became Warner Media, is now spinning off Warner in combining with a new company. It's combining assets with a new company into a new company with Discovery Communications. At the same time, we've got Amazon acquiring MGM's entertainment assets. So the whole world of media is being reshaped. What's going on here, and what does it mean for investors, particularly in AT&T and in the new company? And for people playing the M&A game in media stocks.
Yeah, and media is always a fun, maybe the most fun part of the M&A world, I think.
I agree.
And it every few years it really bubbles up. So we're in that period again. And just to go back a little bit. So basically this is two weeks ago now, or a little more than 2 weeks ago now, that AT&T announced this spinoff. The stock fell 7% the week of the week the deal was announced, and it's been sort of flat since. Yes, it is a big M&A move, but what's so interesting about AT&T's spinoff of Warner Media and sort of rolling back its massive acquisition of Time Warner is that at the end of the day, what really mattered here and what this really was a dividend cut, right? So they are taking the opportunity with this restructuring to cut their dividends significantly. AT&T had become a favorite play of dividend investors because it paid about a 7% dividend yield. Dividend investors know that anytime there's a outsized yield like that, there's reason to be concerned. And AT&T had continued to say, no, we're committed to this dividend. We're gonna keep paying it. We can support it. Well, sure enough, when they decided to spin off Warner Media, they said, we're also going to cut our dividend. They didn't have to do that. It's worth pointing out. And in some ways, when the rumors first started bubbling up the weekend before the deal that AT&T was planning to do this, my initial reaction was the stock would react favorably because investors will see it as a way to shore up their balance sheet and thus keep their generous dividend. So the fact that they didn't do that is what caught, I don't think anyone was all that surprised that AT&T gave up on media. I think people were very surprised and angry that they gave up on their generous dividend. So
yes.
So basically, AT&T is the underlying business is tech and media, right? But basically it was a tech and media story inside a dividend. And so that's why that was the big story 2 weeks ago as this happened, and it's why the stock moved so much. Now it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out. So we can talk a little bit about the actual the assets themselves.
What I'm curious about, when you combine those assets with Discovery's, is this going to be an attractive investment, do you think?
Well, so I think in order to answer that, we have to think about the fact that there are two investments here now, right? So there will be the pure play wireless company or pure play wireless and broadband company, basically a telecom company that AT&T will be going back to its roots, essentially.
Right, becoming again.
So you have that, and then the current AT&T shareholders will own 71% of the stock in this newly combined media company called, or we don't know what it's called yet, but basically Discovery Warner Media. Let's just step back again for 1 second, because the reason AT&T initially bought Time Warner was because the wireless telephone business is a really tough, competitive, fairly low margin business. And so the hope was that, okay, we'll own HBO, for instance, through Time Warner, and we will be able to give AT&T wireless shareholders free HBO, which will give them a reason to stick with our wireless subscription rather than canceling and going to Verizon. That was the idea, right? So they've decided that didn't work, but that doesn't mean that the wireless business is any better a business than it was in the past. So you have that business still being pretty tough. The good news for AT&T is it will now have more ability to just invest fully in 5G. And that's really the key here, right? They were trying to do too many things at once. They were trying to pay a dividend. They were trying to fund this very expensive 5G rollout. And they were trying to run a streaming business where content costs are now some $10 billion to even $20 billion a year.
You could argue that the most important thing they need to do now is build out 5G.
Well, I think that's certainly what's at the core of AT&T's mission. I agree. So something, we've said in the magazine, something had to give, and it gave. And so now you have the media company. In terms of whether the media company will be a good investment once this thing finalizes, say a year from now, I think it's a tough question. There is a lot of attractive content inside WarnerMedia, right? All the HBO assets are really attractive. And then you combine that with Discovery, which I think is a little more of a wild card here. Discovery just launched its own streaming platform within the last 6 months, Discovery Plus, I believe it was 6 months. And that's essentially all you can eat of the Food Network, HGTV, so food shows and home renovation shows. And I'll admit I've been watching a lot of Discovery Plus in my house. It turns out that home renovation shows actually have a lot of appeal for a wide range of viewers, including my 6-year-old and my 11-year-old. So
that's very interesting. So, I'm worried about that.
So I think there's something here. I mean, you mentioned scale being so important. Well, this new media company will have a lot more scale now. We'll have a lot more ways of bringing people in, because if you like old great shows like The Sopranos or The Wire, you get that on HBO. HBO, of course, is making new shows. And then you also have this endless amounts of sort of cheap to make home and food shows on Discovery, all on presumably what will all be on one streaming platform. So, they're going to have to compete, and they're going to have to also spend $10 to $20 billion a year probably on content. It's an expensive business now, but we'll see. I mean, I think people have shown they're willing to pay for multiple streaming services.
And we'll see how the stock trades once the assets are all combined, and that'll probably tell us something.
Yeah.
So content, you just mentioned, is really the name of the game. And that's what Amazon seems to be after with its MGM purchase. Tell us more about that and how it fits into the Amazon ambitions.
Yeah, so the week after this big news from AT&T and Discovery, Amazon announced that it would be buying MGM Studios for about $8.5 billion. Now, MGM Studios is basically a library of franchises. And I'm guessing most people are only, so it includes James Bond, the Addams Family, Pink Panther, RoboCop. One of those names really is not like the others, because James Bond is the only one there that's particularly interesting to people on a recurring basis. It's the only one that's going to really bring significant eyeballs to a streaming service, I think. So I think this is a head scratcher in some ways, right? Is James Bond really worth $8 billion? It might be. And that's because $8 billion in the world of content is actually not that much, right? Amazon is spending more than that every year on content. Netflix is spending $17 billion a year annually on content. So if you can get a library for $8 billion and then maybe, you now have to create new content from it, and that will cost additional dollars, but it's not a huge expenditure perhaps in the streaming world, and certainly no longer a big expenditure for Amazon, which has a market value of $1.6 trillion. So, I think the question is how big a deal is this for Amazon? We'll see. They like to just create this flywheel effect. If Amazon Prime Video becomes a better service, then people are more willing to buy Prime, and more people buying Prime means more people shopping on Amazon.com. It's like a very long, you got to play things out here to see how it works. But I think that's what's happening.
Do you see a lot more M&A in the sector? Or should I ask it differently? Are there particularly good assets left to pick up?
So it seems like there's still some fairly obvious targets. I mean, I think everyone's wondering what happens with ViacomCBS. There's still ultimately a bunch of it's ultimately a bunch of cable channels, but they also own a movie studio. They own Paramount. They now have a streaming service called Paramount Plus. So it would be a similar, it's not the same as Discovery, but it's kind of like a similar asset. So I think that's probably what people will be looking for next. I think it'll be interesting to see what Comcast does, since like AT&T, Comcast is both in broadband on one side and media. So do they stick with that kind of media broadband approach, or do they do what AT&T did, which was spin off the media side of things? And of course, Comcast owns NBC Universal. So I think a lot of folks are interested in what will happen with NBC Universal next.
We'll be watching and we'll be reporting about it in Barron's. So thanks for that. I'd like to go to some listener questions before we sign off. Pietro asks, considering that CDN providers are essential for linking websites and web applications, what is your view on this industry? Do you see any future upside?
Yeah. So CDNs, just for folks who aren't familiar, content delivery networks, this is basically a business that helps deliver internet content by placing lots of computers all over the network, right? They talk about the edge. So you have if you're ordering something from a website or you're getting a streaming service, it can't really just come from one central location because it would take too long to get to you. So you have these content delivery networks that spread out computers all over the internet so that the content is stored and cached closer to you. And that's what these CDNs do. I think Pietro, the last part of his question also asked about Fastly, which had become this really hot stock during the pandemic. They are a smaller, newer CDN, and their stock had been up huge and now it's down huge. What's interesting to me is that there is a much bigger and older company in this area that I've watched for many years called Akamai. Akamai is one of those dot-com survivors that's never come close to revisiting its 1999 highs, even though it's done, like if you went from that point, it's done pretty well. So it's a real business. Sales are still growing close to 10% annually. And it's actually a pretty cheap stock. I was just looking at the numbers. I mean, it's trading at 19 times next year's earnings. Fastly, meanwhile, is still losing money. So I think the CDN area is still very valuable and important. There are some disruptions happening where, things are going to be more software driven, and maybe that makes things like companies like Akamai less relevant. But I think this Akamai is an interesting way to play kind of the continued growth of the internet.
All right. Thanks for that. We have another question from Essie. In the next 12 to 18 months, How do you view the sustainability and volatility of the tech industry and the companies in it?
Yeah,
so one question.
I saw that question and I very quickly thought back to our, you know, to the meme stock stuff and what we were talking about early in the call, because it's tech now suddenly feels like the sleepy, steady part of the market, right? Compared to these meme stocks.
Right. As I said earlier, it's so last year.
It's so last year, exactly. So the meme trade is sort of a reminder that tech really is filled with real companies that ultimately are still attached to real fundamentals. Yes, they get valued at a higher multiple than more traditional businesses, but so they are expensive, but you know, I think tech continues to change the way we do things, and that means there's real long-term growth here. And unlike the meme stocks, you can at least make an argument for it, right? I can find a way to justify most of the valuations around tech. So that's how I would think about it.
All right. So you anticipated the next question. This one comes from John. How do you bring a sense of reality and a margin of safety to current tech valuations?
Yeah. And this was another one. I'll admit I did a little bit of check the math beforehand to take a look at this. Right. So I think a good way to look at it is just using forward PEs, forward price earnings multiples. So the NASDAQ composite currently trades at about 30 times earnings. And that's versus its 10-year average of 22. Right, that's a 50% premium. Doesn't sound great if you're an investor, right? But it doesn't feel as pricey when you start thinking about the market overall, because I compared the NASDAQ PE to the S&P 500, and what's happened is because all the multiples are up, the NASDAQ doesn't look so expensive on that basis, because the NASDAQ is trading at a 1.4 premium to the S&P 500's forward multiple. I know there are a lot of numbers there. Hopefully this is straightforward enough, but the NASDAQ is trading at 1.4 times what the S&P is trading at, using kind of a PE as the baseline. So 1.4 times. So that's still a big premium, but the NASDAQ traditionally has traded at a 1.26 times multiple. So it's always traded at a premium. And so this current premium, if you basically normalize it for the broad market, the NASDAQ is only trading at a 12% premium to its 10-year average. And when I see that, I think you can make a case across the board that tech still deserves a 12% premium, right, to the typical stock, because
given the growth rates.
The growth rates, there are just still a lot more opportunities around tech. Now that doesn't mean there won't be additional corrections along the way, as we've seen, interest rates remain a concern. But I don't think these are outrageous prices for the NASDAQ. And of course, there are also outliers within the NASDAQ composite. But if we just take the NASDAQ to be a proxy for tech, I don't think that the prices right now are crazy.
All right. Good to know. So one last question. It's our little joke, Alex. We can't have a call without discussing Apple. And Mashala has anticipated this, I suppose, with the question, is Apple a growth or a value stock now?
You know how people like to say yes to an answer?
Yes.
So I think it's a good question. My first thought as I think about that is, does it matter? And I guess it matters to the degree that Apple continues to trade at a premium to its historical average, which would suggest, you know, it needs to be a growth. It needs to justify that with growth. So I think there are still so many opportunities for Apple ahead, and you don't even have to buy into the fact that it's going to make a car. I am very skeptical of that long term, that Apple's going to really successfully enter the car market.
Very long term bet.
I think it's a nice. We see this often with Apple, right, where they talk about these big bets, and really what they do is kind of, yeah, the iPhone was that, but really the way Apple has succeeded over the last 10 years is to kind of be more incremental, improve on what it has, build out its ecosystem. And there are lots of opportunities there. And so I think right now, you know, that's probably what Apple needs to help people understand better is, are they a growth or value stock? Because they need to show growth. They are being treated like a growth stock right now is probably the best answer. So they will need to continue to show some growth. And if there's slip-ups, and the multiple contracts, that will cause a sell-off. But I think Apple has plenty. Apple deserves the benefit of the doubt at this point, right? I mean, Tim Cook has shown the ability to continue to find ways to grow revenue and profits at crazy rates. And so I would give them the benefit of the doubt. And I think they will justify their growth multiple.
All right, Alex, I want to thank you for that. I want to thank Michelle for letting us discuss Apple here.
We hadn't even planned it.
No, that was perfect. And Alex, thanks for this really exciting walk through the meme stock landscape and everything else tech related. I want to thank our listeners as well for tuning in. Please join us tomorrow when Brown Harris Stevens, Stephen Klingerman, and Lee Wallace will talk to Becky Strom, Managing Editor of Mansion Global, about the demand for sustainable building features and amenities and how luxury developers and sellers are adapting. And Alex, you said your kids ages 6 and 11 are into home remodeling shows. They might want to turn it into Barron's Live tomorrow.
Okay.
All right. Thanks again, everybody. Stay well and have a good day.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.